Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode is powered by TD Ameritrade. Every stroke counts on the scorecard and every penny counts in the market. That's why TD Ameritrade is committed to straightforward pricing with no surprises, so you're free to swing with confidence. Visit tdameritrade.com/friedegg. Member SIPC. Today we welcome on Aaron Oberholzer. Aaron played on the PGA Tour for a number of years and is now an analyst on the Golf Channel, kind of a jack of all trades, covering everything from NCAA golf to the PGA Tour. This week he's out at the Senior Players, and we just kind of pick up our conversation here talking about Matt Wolff's win last week, the young guns on tour, kind of what's changed in the game, and then we close with a little bit of talk about the Open. So here's Aaron Oberholzer.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
Fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
The distance thing is going to just be with the young guys. It's just crazy because everybody was like, Champ's an anomaly. It's like, no, he's just the start.
No, he's just him and Wolf for the beginning.
Yeah.
Him and Wolf for the beginning. I played with a kid. I'm good friends with a kid. He's like a little brother to me, Frankie Sappin, who plays for Alabama. He's 124, 125 when he wants it all day, all day. We went and played his home club, North Oaks, in Minnesota, a couple nights ago. Was it two nights ago? Just played nine holes for fun. Had my boys out there, and they were whacking it around. And Frankie was coming off the lake like he was wake surfing all week up in there. Just had a week off. Was up there with the family. And no warm-up swings, no practice. Gets on the first tee. There's a bunker down there on the right side. Downhill tee shot. Bunker on the right side's got to be a solid 290 carry. Probably three bills to carry it to play in about 290 downhill, and flushes it over the bunker by 15, 20 yards, and hit an eight iron into the first hole, which is a par five. I hit a five wood. I necked mine a little bit down, but it was in the middle of the fairway, and literally hit five wood. He hit eight iron.
That's crazy.
So this is just the start. You're right. He was 25 to 30 yards by me easily, sometimes 40 when he wanted to be, the whole nine holes we played. That was unbelievable, the speed.
I was talking to this kid I know's coach at the U.S. Open. He was the first alternate. And the guy we were just talking, he teaches all the, you know, a lot of the young kids in Chicago that are like really good. He's got a few guys that are probably going to be on tour soon. But he was telling me, he's like, all I teach now is all we work on is speed and putting.
That's all it is, speed and putting.
Yeah. Just you hit it far, you know, and then you make putts, and you're going to be good.
Yeah.
Because you'll learn how to hit wedges eventually.
Exactly. Approach play comes into play. I mean, you looked this last week, and approach play was really important. I mean, you know, Morikawa's won. He's not long, but his approach play has to be good because he's not long. He's an average-length guy. But Wolf's approach play was stellar. So there is when you get to the highest level, it does become about proper control and approach play, but it's so much easier, made so much easier if you've got 175 or less in on every hole, you know? So if you're not playing outside of 175 yards, the game's pretty simple.
I think that is what kind of makes Wolf and Morikawa a little bit different than, say, like a Cameron Champ or, you know, some of the other young guys that we've seen recently, is they, you know, Like Morikawa put on one of the best approach performances of the whole season.
Of the year, without a doubt. Here's the funny thing. Lavner and I were talking about this, and early in the year, or during NCAAs, and then after I saw Morikawa for the first time play up close at Pasatiempo, at the Western, I really looked at his game and I said, and then I'd seen Wolf, and I knew I was going to see Wolf again at NCAAs, and I knew what he'd done this year. But I'm sitting there looking at Morikawa and I'm going, this is the most tour ready dude of the four guys. I mean, like if you look at the complete game, you know, there's just, he doesn't have any weaknesses. He's not long, but you know, which might be his only weakness, quite honestly, Colin, because every other part of his game, I watched him and I'm like, nah, good swing. Controls his distances really well, flights his ball, can hit it both directions, cuts it, fades it. He's not scared, drives it really well. His good touch around the greens and putts it great. And I'm sitting there going, well, you know, whereas Wolf, you know, I saw some holes in his game, quite honestly, that I thought could be cleaned up. Hovland, I felt, had some holes. He's not a great putter. Hovland isn't. I think him and Wolf are going to be streaky to start with. And you saw it where Wolf got hot and used his distance to his advantage. But Morikawa is going to be that like real plotter, consistent, just not make any mistakes. I saw Colin of the four, and, you know, throwing Suh in there. I thought that Colin had the most tour ready game from driver through the putter. As far as tour ready to win, you know, obviously with the distance, like you just said, big guy with the distance stuff, I thought it was Wolf who could win right away. It was definitely Matt Wolf, especially when you look at the courses he's coming through in the Midwest. I thought he might give himself a shot, and he did.
Yeah, it's
and then took advantage of it.
So you've covered, you know, you did a lot of college stuff this spring. Did you foresee all of them having as much success as they did when, you know, you saw Colin at the Western and then NCAAs, and then you saw, you know, Victor and Matt Wolf at the NCAAs? Did you expect them all to play so well so quick?
I didn't expect. I thought it'd be a little bumpier for Matt. I expected Hovland to play well. He has. And I expected Colin Morikawa to play well. He has. After watching Justin Suh, I watched Justin for 18 holes at Passy, and he didn't have his best day, didn't have his best stuff by any stretch, and Passy beat him up a little bit. I see Justin, quite honestly, needing a year on the web or on the Korn Ferry tour. He's the least ready to play at this level, based on what I saw.
Yeah, obviously everybody's going to compare this class. I mean, and the, you know, the, one of the things is like Will Gordon hasn't even really. You know, he hasn't gotten the PGA Tour sponsor, but he's been playing on Canada and he's been lighting it up there. I mean, he's another just unbelievable talent. So everybody's going to compare this class to that JT Spieth-Berger.
Will's fantastic. Cameron Young, as long as his back stays healthy from Wake Forest, he's a stud.
Yeah.
He could do it. This class is going to be, when it's all said and done, the class that's either graduated or come out this year, 2019, out of college, they're all really, really strong players. And I can see all the aforementioned guys being on tour at some point with full status at some point, probably within the next 2 to 3 years, quite honestly. Justin's got to work on his wedge play. Suh's got to work on his wedge play, his flighting, his irons. He hits the ball, in my opinion, too high. Even though people say, oh, you like that? Eh, you like that to a certain extent, but I think trajectory control is really important when you get to the highest level and being able to control the distances with your irons. And he was exposed, I thought, at Pasatiempo on his wedge play. And Pasatiempo is a golf course that requires, you know, really, really crazy good iron control and good approach play. I mean, exquisite approach play because of how the greens are. And yeah, you're hitting shorter irons in there, but that should give you even more control of your ball. And I just didn't see it out of Justin that day that I watched him. Again, he didn't have his best stuff by any stretch. I
agree with that.
I think the ball flight's a little too high.
With the tour, it's, you know, the pins are tucked and getting at those and, you know, just being able to hit it into the right spots. And it's like what Tiger says is, you know, he's always worried about missing at the right distance. And I feel like when you're, you know, going really good, these guys are just hitting it within, you know, a yard of the number every time. And that ties perfectly into trajectory.
Oh, without a doubt. That's why Jason Day, I watched Jason Day for 18 holes out at 3M. And he was, it was the first round of golf I've ever watched Jason on the ground where he didn't take a full swing at an iron. First round of golf I've ever seen him play. I'm like, he's serious about this. Tiger's, you know, William Steve has convinced him, and maybe he's talked to Tiger and he's taken it to heart because, you know, in college, Tiger swung hard at irons, but that was college. But when he turned pro and started working with Butch on his game, that guy hardly ever took a – he never took 100% swing at an iron and still doesn't. It's all – the full swings for him with an iron, 75 to 85%. And every time I saw Jason the first almost 8 years on tour, even when he won the PGA, if it was in between two clubs, it was in between a 9 and an 8, it was a full-blown 9. I mean, just back it up a ball in the stance and just launch it if I have to, versus playing it a ball, you know, in the middle of your stance or a ball up in your stance and just feathering a little fade in there with an 8 if you have to and just taking a little off. And I saw a lot of that this week from Jason, which I thought was really cool. I mean, he was really flighting the ball. Never seen him hit it as low as he did this week. It was really cool to watch, actually.
Day, that the Stevie Day thing is something to watch. I think like it'd be really fascinating to see if Day can kind of remake, you know, he had his like run, that 18-month run where maybe, you know, best run for 18 months we've seen since Tiger, you know. And and then, you know, he's kind of struggled the last couple of years, but like if he was able to, you know, fall down, you know, where he's been in the teens and then get back up into that top 3-4 players in the world, you know, by, you know, reinvent. So few guys, I feel like, once you get to that elite level, are able to kind of reinvent their game.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard. And I think Jason's going to find it very difficult. And he is going to go. He's going to go through some serious growing pains with this, with learning how to do this at you know, what I guess you'd consider a later age, learning how to play this way, even though he's still, what is he? He's still in his 20s, right? Late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's 30.
I think he's
28 or 29. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I think he can do it. It's just how much patience does he have to play like the kind of the way he did at 3M this last week on a golf course, seemingly you would think he would destroy with his game, and just, you know, barely makes the cut and then plays, you know, okay on the weekend, not great by any stretch. You know, how much patience does he have for that kind of golf and for how long? So, you know, if he has the wherewithal to stick with it, I think it could pay great dividends, especially in the majors.
So with all these young guys and, you know, the success, I mean, this week was at Minneapolis was crazy with how young the leaderboard was. I mean, you were like, is Jason Day, so he's 31. Is Jason Day
31? There you go.
Is Jason Day a, like what we would used to consider like a 38-year-old?
That's a good point. Yeah. It's like, I guess you can start looking, I don't know, in dog years kind of compared, compared to, I mean, guys are learning at a younger, earlier clip because of, you know, I mean, I think for all the things that we've all talked about on air at Golf Channel, you know, I think, you know, TrackMan plays a role in that. You're not sitting there hunting for something over the period of 200 or 300 balls in 4 or 5 hours. You're literally looking at a screen going, oh, that's why I'm hitting it this way. You know, if you understand TrackMan and you understand all the numbers and permutations, you can figure it out swing to swing. This is how I need to to create a, you know, you can turn a number into a feel, and that's what these guys are so good at. They can turn that number into a feel and then just change their golf swing to match up to what they want to see the ball flight, and then double check. Okay, that's right. And literally you can fix and change your golf swing or change your golf swing in one or two swings now. And then get it confirmed that you're doing what you want to do. I think a bigger factor than anything, I go back to my junior days. I was playing a cutoff hand-me-down set from my grandfather that didn't even fit me. And I was trying to finagle it and figure out how to use it and so on and so forth at 13, 14, 15 years old, till I finally got a decent set of clubs that I still, again, weren't fit for me. They just right off the rack. These kids, junior kids nowadays they have access to the same thing that we do as professionals. They have the same access to the fitting and to the TrackMan numbers and getting the spin rates right and the launch right and optimizing their drivers and optimizing their irons. And, oh, this is the descent angle you need and your irons. And this is the apex you need at your speed to stop the ball. I mean, they have all this at their disposal. And before you know it, boom, it's just plug and play, man. And I think in all honesty, between those two things, those are the two biggest things of why kids are so ready on the PGA Tour nowadays. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got the metrics. They know the metrics that they have to have because they're out there and the data is there. We didn't have this kind of data when I was growing up. You know, you literally dug it out of the dirt and you played the game with more feel, without a doubt, with way more feel than you do now. There's a lot more science in the game, but it's that science that's allowing younger kids who don't have the experience of digging it out of the dirt to get to the levels they are so quickly. The science is helping them massively.
I was thinking about this the other day, and I think like we're seeing like these wave people, these like the young guns kind of come in waves. Like we had that JT Spieth Berger kind of run, right? And I think those were the guys that never hit so like Ricky was the guy, Ricky in that group was the guys that never hit anything but a solid core ball. JT and Spieth, those guys are the guys that never hit a driver head that wasn't 460 cc's. And then these guys are the guys that never, you know, never took a lesson without TrackMan.
Without TrackMan, exactly right. Exactly right. That's a great way to look at it, Andy. It's the progression of the science of the game. How many years did it take to go from wood to steel? And then how many years were we in steel until we hit graphite? And then how many years that wood shafts to steel shafts? And then how many years were we in just steel shafts before the first graphite shaft was invented?
Yeah.
And then how many years were we with wooden heads for drivers and woods?
I think it was
to metal heads.
I think it was 93 to 97 was the transition for the wood to metal, is from what I can tell. Like the last persimmons were gone in 97.
Exactly. But the first metal head, early 80s, the original one from TaylorMade.
Uh-huh.
So that was when it first came out, when it was widely adopted. You're right. It was probably the mid to late 90s when everybody said, I've got to get rid of the wood. It's just, it's the persimmon is, it's a dinosaur. It's, you know, it's archaic now. So in the last, call it 25 years, we've seen the biggest technology jump, the biggest technology jump in the history of the game, from graphite shafts to head. I mean, look at, I mean, graphite shafts to heads, to balls, to everything versus from let's use 1996 or 97 as the delineation, the mark, you know, that's the marker. In years going back all the way to Bobby Jones era, you know, when they were using hickory shafts, the golf ball and everything hadn't changed as much as it has changed, and everything, the game hasn't changed in that period of time as much as it's changed in the last 25 years, you know, or 22 years, right? I mean, that's insanity. I mean, when you really stop it, I mean, that's crazy. In 22 years, look what has changed. Hell, my driving distance in 2003 was, I want to say, 285 yards, which was dead average on tour. Dead average on tour. Average last year on tour was 296.
Yeah.
296. And that's with a Pro V1X. That was the first year, 03, of the Pro V1X. And now, you know, now it's 296 with virtually the same ball. So what's that tell you? Shafts have gotten better. Drivers have gotten better. Driver heads have gotten massively better since 2003. Since 2010, they've gotten massively, massively better.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and guys have gotten stronger, period. Those are the three factors that I look at when I look at distance. You know, I remember playing rock hard golf courses in 2003. So you can't sit there and tell me, well, the courses are faster. No, that's BS. Courses were fast back when I played on tour in 2003, my rookie year. It's just that the technology has gotten so crazy advanced in the last 15, 25 years that, you know, that's what I believe has allowed these young guys to really flourish, quite honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good players, don't get me wrong. But I would love to see, you know what I would love to see? I'd love to see a tournament with Balata. Everybody plays the same Balata golf ball, because pretty much that's what it was back in the early to mid 90s. Everybody was playing relatively the same ball. They're all wound liquid core balls. And then I want to see everybody's got to play a blade. Got to play a blade. Everybody's got to carry a 2-iron. And quite honestly, I don't care what woods you put in your bag. Seriously, you can go ahead and take the woods right now. But with a Balata golf ball and blade irons, even using today's driver, the ball's not going. That's a marshmallow. The ball's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
not going anywhere.
I think that, like, so I've messed around with this stuff, and I think, like, the Balata, when I hit it about 300, and that Balata, when I hit the Balata, it's like 275. It's nuts.
Yeah,
it's 25 yards.
Yeah, it's going. Yeah, which was like back in the 90s was like that was above average driving distance. I want to say what Davis led the tour in driving distance before Daly came along in the late 80s, early 90s when he was using Persimmon, and I think he was averaging like 284, 285.
Yeah,
and that was what was leading the driving distance. If my memory serves me correct, I might be off on that number. But I don't think it was much. It wasn't 290. I know that. And yeah, it's a different ball game. You know, I would love to see a tournament like that. The best players are still probably going to be the best players, but you would bring a lot more guys into the fray, quite honestly, because you'd put an onus on driving the golf ball straight.
Well, I think
that's what you had to do back then.
I think the thing that gets lost too is like the guys that weren't the longest that had all the skills. Like the guy I think is like the poster child for everything that kind of happened is Justin Leonard.
Oh, him and Pavin.
Yeah.
Him and Corey, without a doubt. You could take either him or Corey. They both, and actually to a certain extent, Lee Jansen, because he was right on that cusp. And so I would say that those three guys with what they accomplished, winning majors, they all won majors with either Balatas or a wound golf ball. As soon as that wound golf ball went away and they went to solid core golf balls, those guys were basically done. They were done, because now all the longer hitters could just stand up there and swing away freely, and they weren't getting the same dispersion rate. So it just didn't matter. Missing fairways stopped mattering. and put those guys, you know, put those guys went the way of the dodo.
Yeah.
Those guys. It's why Brian Gay, in my opinion, yard for yard, the best player on tour. Best player on tour, yard for yard.
It's unbelievable. You know, he's I think he's the only 4-time first team All SEC player ever.
SEC?
Yeah.
I'd have to check that, but I believe you. But I believe you. You're probably right. For sure.
He's unbelievable.
I can't think of any off the top of my head. Oh yeah, the guy's amazing.
Same with Chez Reavie.
I have so much respect for Brian. Yep, a lot of respect for Chez. All those guys who hit it, you know, who literally I can play out of their bags. In fact, I'm longer than Brian Gay, and I'm probably a little bit longer than Chez. And you know, and those guys, the fact that those guys are still out there competing and winning, you know, with Chez winning. I mean, sure, there are certain golf courses that. There are only about a handful to maybe 10 courses a year he's got a chance to – truly a decent chance to win on with his game. Otherwise, he's got to do crazy good stuff outside the box that his skill set doesn't usually set up for. So much respect for those guys because that puts a lot of pressure on you to sit there and go – to literally look at the schedule and go, well, shoot, I've only got – 10 tournaments a year that I really have a good chance to win.
I got to make 1.5 million in 10 tournaments.
Yeah, exactly. I got to make 1.5 million in 10 tournaments. That's basically the way they got to look at things, which is, that's pretty good. That's pretty good numbers. If you can make 150 grand a tournament, that's pretty good.
What do you think there's any psychological thing for these young guys playing really well? Cause the other young guys playing well early. I mean, how was that for you when you were coming out and like playing on tour as a young guy?
Oh, as far as motivation?
Like intimidation. Like, were you, you know, was there intimidation?
No. I think it depends on the player to a certain extent. I think certain players are going to be a little more intimidated than others. But I've never seen a group of young guys since the Spieth crew came out that were not intimidated by older, more established players. My generation, Tiger, you know, Tiger kind of helped us with that, but experience still mattered. Even when I came out, experience still mattered. There was no TrackMan. There was no one there to reaffirm you're doing the right thing day in and day out. You know, even longer hitters like Hank Keeney, who came out same age. I played college golf with him and Tiger. They were the two longest on the planet when we played in college. They were both longer than Daly. And I sat there and Hank, you know, couldn't do what we all thought he could do for whatever reason, but he had the formula you thought to be able to do some really cool things in professional golf with as long as he hit it. And with as athletic as he was and the speed he could create, he had holes in his game without a doubt. But there was definitely an experience gap that doesn't exist or isn't as big of a gap now as it was when I came out on tour. And even before me, where you had to learn the golf courses, whereas now, you know, because there isn't such most of the golf courses on tour, the yardage books are so good. You can literally play them. You could show up on Tuesday, go around TPC Twin Cities with a putter and a wedge and just chip and putt around the greens and play that golf course from the yardage book. No problem. No problem.
The other thing is the greens reading books. You don't even have to know how to read a green.
Exactly right. So if you're confused about if you're that calm and you feel that good about it, literally you can show up on Thursday morning never seeing the golf course and you can probably shoot a pretty good score. Whereas that was never the case. You always had to do your homework. You always had to do that. Now, obviously, the guys who do more homework, they're going to have a better chance to a certain extent. At least that's my theory. They're always going to have a better chance because they know this or that or the other thing. That may be a guy who hasn't seen the golf course, but I've also shown up to golf tournaments and golf courses that I haven't seen before on lesser tours, not the PGA Tour, but on lesser tours where I've shot 65 and I didn't play a practice round, you know? So it's a lot of it's having no fear, understanding your own game, playing the distances, not trying to do too much. But yeah, I don't think that these guys are intimidated at all because they've got all the information they need. There's no stone left unturned for the most part. They have everything they need to have to play well. It literally comes down to execution. There's no guessing involved. You know, you don't even catch hardly flyers anymore. There's no guessing in shot to a certain extent, unless the rough's, you know, 4 or 5 inches deep and you bury one and you really don't know how it's going to come out to a certain extent. Or Bermuda still, you do some guessing in. But quite honestly, there's not a lot of guessing in golf anymore. There's not a lot of freedom in playing the old school way, freedom in playing by feel.
Yeah.
You know, guys who played by feel and played with that kind of freedom because they had the experience on the golf course and had the experience of tournament rounds under their belt, that's all gone now. I mean, that's another reason why these young guys are able to come out and play the way they're able to play right off the bat. They have the freedom already in knowing that they know what they need to know, period. And then they just go out and execute. Boom, this is what I need to do. I need to get my driver here. I need to have my spin rate here. I need to have my launch angle here. What does TrackMan say? Perfect, I got it all there. Boom, ready to go. I need to have my 6-iron fly this far. The descent angle's got to be here. Oh, what does TrackMan say? Boom, perfect, got that dialed. All right, we're ready to play. There's a random 6-iron for Matt Wolf. What's it, 2 bills probably, 195?
Maybe 210. 190, I think, yeah. It's 210.
Might be 210. I don't know his yardages.
I mean, he was hitting, yeah, I think, but he was hitting like 7-irons from 200 down the stretch. He had had a little adrenaline going, but I'd imagine he hits the 6-iron at least 205.
Yeah, so if you feel comfortable with your technique, about the only thing that still exists is pressure coming down the stretch and maybe not trusting technique. But if you trust your technique, it's literally execution. Just seeing the shot, committing to the shot, and hitting the shot. Because everything else is, you can't screw it up, quite honestly, other than letting pressure get to you. That's the one thing that's still getting easier for the guys, hand dealing with pressure because of all these things. But that still exists and will always exist. And technique. I saw Wyndham Clark struggled with. I could see he was struggling down the back nine this last week with his technique. So I could see that maybe the pressure was getting to him to a certain extent. So each individual is going to handle it a little differently in that case. But veterans aren't coming out like in my day. I remember my first Saturday on tour, making the cut in my first event at Sony and getting to play with Stuart Appleby. Like, this is cool. He's won 4 or 5 times on tour, you know. Here's a guy that's, you know, played on President's Cup teams and knows his way around and is known as a phenomenal ball striker. I would step to that first tee. I was a little intimidated by Stuart Appleby.
Yeah.
You know, because I knew how, you know, it's just that he's played Wildlife 50 times probably, 500 times. Who knows? I mean, a lot. He's played that golf course a lot. He knows it like the back of his hand. He knows what to do when he hits it over in the left rough, the right rough. He knows what to do when he misses a green here, there, everywhere. I've got to learn that stuff.
I don't think Matt Wolf stepping to the tee or Morikawa is stepping the tee if they're paired with, say, Louis Oosthuizen. I don't think they're intimidated by that.
No, they're not. Absolutely not. No, because they know all the metrics. Because if they don't, they're going to have them soon. But they probably still have stat guys that are saying, and a lot of guys do have stat guys saying, this is what you have to do well this week if you want to have a chance to win on this particular golf course. So this is what you need to practice, you know, which is back when I played, which wasn't that long ago. We didn't have the strokes gain status. We didn't have all the metadata that you have now. And all the data that they have now. So you're sitting there looking at it going, you had to play the golf course once or twice or 1 year, 4 rounds, and then go back and then reevaluate in your own mind. all right, this is what I need to work on for this golf course next year. Now it's like, no, this is what you need to work on before you've even seen the golf course. This is what you need to work on to go win here. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's really, it's actually pretty cool, but it takes some of the romanticism out of the game, in my opinion. You know, the guesswork and the romantic side of the game is kind of lost because I think there's a little too much science in the game right now, in my opinion.
What would you do if you could, you're a golf star. What would you do to get a little romanticism back in the game?
Oh gosh. That's a great question, Andy. I'd go back. I don't know. I'd probably be one of these old fuddy-duddies that'd go back to older tech, you know. Get rid of these big drivers. The same thing Nicklaus talks about. Same thing Jack talks about. I to get some of the romanticism back of the game and to really see who the best players are, who's going to do their homework and work the hardest to do their homework to understand what they need to do to win week in and week out at every golf course. You know, get rid of the greens books. You can have yardage books because, you know, even way back in the day, guys were making yardage books or had yardage books when Gorgeous George was out, you know, printing them up and writing it and making them by hand.
The greens books, I think, would be my first thing. Gone.
Greens books. I want the greens books so gone it's not even funny.
Like you have to be able to read a green. Like Johnny Miller didn't win a couple majors because he couldn't read greens.
I'm telling you what, Andy, you and I are on the same page, and I know we sound like get off my lawn, but I agree with you 100%. I think greens books are right now are worse than the golf ball and the driver combined, quite honestly. I'd get rid of greens books. I'd get rid of the driver. I'd go back to.
Here's a question.
I'd go back to 19. I'd go back to 1998 tech. That's what I would do. Now go back to 1998 tech. You can't make and no Tiger. You can't make your own golf ball. You can't have Brock Ishii make you a perfect ball for you that was solid core that no one else had access to. You can't do that. So you got to go back to the wound ball, which he was drumming everybody with anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered. But I would say that you got to go back to 1998 pre that, you know.
So
Titleist Professional wound ball or Bellotta, I don't mind. We can, as long as we go back to a wound, the characteristics of a wound ball, I think that would bring some of the romanticism back in and. You know, some old school golf. You know, I don't mind. You can play Ping I 2 pluses if you want. I don't have any problem with that. Irons, but no TrackMan. You know, none of that stuff. I want to see guys dig it out of the dirt. And I think to a certain extent, a lot of guys still do that. I don't think there's a lot of guys out there who are so in love with the TrackMan that they, the top guys at least. I don't think that there's too many of those guys. I still think a lot of the top guys dig it out of the dirt and really go find it, and understand their feels like innately, and it serves them well. There's no doubt. But there's a certain amount of science that those guys use for sure that are allowing them to do what they're doing to the game right now that maybe they wouldn't be allowed to do if we were to go. Hit the way back button and go 20, 25 years in the time machine. Quite honestly, I don't think that would, I think it would be a tougher game for everybody. And I think it'd be more fun. You know, we could play 6,500 yard golf courses again.
Yeah. So you could play Pasatiempo. We could play
Pasatiempo again. Yeah, exactly.
Something I think about a lot, you know, and this is kind of points to this whole conversation is, What's the tournament that experience matters most year in, year out?
Oh, Augusta.
You know, that's the only place Masters. They don't allow green reading books.
Yep. And God bless them. And I hope they continue to do that. I'm pretty sure that that Chairman Ridley's gonna, he is not going to allow them. And I hope that that continues to happen at Augusta. And quite honestly, I'd like to see all the major championships not allow them. And I just, yeah, I would. You know, I mean, the guys who make them, the Straka guys, they, I mean, I've said it on Twitter and I've gotten, they've attacked me left and right. Oh, you're killing my, you know, I got to put my kids through college and this and that and the other thing. And, you know, woe is me. What am I going to do without a job if you, if they take away this and that? And I'm like, well, you know, what did the guy who was building metal or built whipping woods do when metal woods came along? Mm-hmm. He figured out how to make metal woods and he worked on those, you know? So, I mean, you just gotta, you gotta adjust, you gotta adapt, you gotta figure out things. And, I would love it to see him taken away, but I just, I don't, you know, after talking with Thomas Pagel, where we had a conversation, Kapalua this year, we were having a conversation because he was there for everybody to, so just in case anybody had any freak outs on the rules, the new rules this year, he was there and he was great to talk to. And, that's going to be the hardest thing is getting rid of those greens books, because then he's like, well, then we probably have to get rid of yardage books. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure you could probably put an addendum in there for green reading materials. And then the yardage books, basically, if a guy who's doing yardage books, basically he just draws the shape of the green and puts nothing on the green. And the players can do all that.
That's
literally
the thing.
Let the players do that.
That's, it should be like a great caddy and a well-prepared caddy would be out there doing that.
Well, caddies do that, but I did that on my own.
Yeah.
So before Mark Long did these gorgeous books that, and these, and you know, and then they're perfect. The numbers are perfect. I mean, right to the letter. Before Mark Long did the books, Gorgeous George did the books. And I'm old enough to know that I played my rookie, maybe my first 2 years, 03 and 04, with Gorgeous George books. I still have them all, still have all my old Gorgeous George yardage books back at home. They're cool. And I remember writing in stuff on the greens because George didn't put all the slopes and the lines in that. I put those in. Well, here's a big slope right here. You got to watch out here. And this is, this slopes, there's a little bump right here that George didn't write in or didn't see, but I see it. So that's going to throw the putt a little bit further right or left than you think it would, just based on my own reconnaissance. You know, and prep, you know these things and you draw them in yourself. I'd love to get back to that. I just don't know if it's ever going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Who knows? I thought they tried and then they kind of fell back, you know?
Yeah. 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 Well, I think, you know, there's a lot, there's probably more going on than I understand and that maybe you understand as well behind closed doors. Maybe there's not, but maybe there is that we don't know about and may never know about. Even if I ask someone, I don't know if we'd get a straight answer, quite honestly.
I don't think they'd tell us anything.
Yeah, I don't know that they would tell us much. Yeah, which is fine. Hey, look, the game's fun right now. It really is. It's fun to watch. It's fun to broadcast. It's fun to still fun to play. It's just different. It's just different than what it used to be. I miss, I think there's a lot of nostalgia in golf, and I feel a lot of nostalgia when I, you know, when I went out with my buddy Frankie Sappen the other night at his club, and we were messing around. He had a bunch of old Bellotta balls. Who knows how good they were, but he had a bunch of old Tour Bellotta balls and professional balls. And we were out there with a Woodwood and Persimmon and having a great time, just hitting shots. He had an old Wilson Staff one iron. This thing, I mean, it's probably the loss of a 3 iron now, but it was definitely from the early 80s to late 70s. And the green victory was as slick as could be on that thing. It was, but I was hitting that thing from like 190 yards, you know, and then I'd move up to 180 and I'd hit these big slices and, you know, open it up a little bit and play it with a Bellotta ball and play this massive 30 yard slice from 180 yards. It was so much fun. You know, that's the kind of, There's a handful of guys playing those shots on tour nowadays when, you know, back in the day, I think a lot of guys had to play those shots and they're fun. They were fun. I love playing shots like that. I love curving the ball, making the ball curve. And, you know, it goes pretty straight now. I mean, I'm watching these guys out there. And even when I go out and play, it's just like, you know, when I want to draw one in, I've got to, I can't start it that far, right? I got to start it like five yards further left than I normally would because it's just not going to move as much.
I think the biggest winner of the whole ball thing was the big body guys that hit a cut.
Yes, without a doubt, it's easier to control, which is why
they went so far.
Oh yeah, without a doubt, because you could hit it. You know, when Nicklaus played, he taught himself how to hit a flat cut, how to hit a flat high bomb, you know, or a knuckle cut, which is what Brooks hits on every shot. But Nicklaus had to teach himself how to do that and take the spin off of it. Tiger had a natural, he was so naturally shallow through the ball that he kind of did that. He might not have been trying to do that. He just did it. But Tiger hit a great flat high bomb cut with a wound ball. I mean, I remember seeing it firsthand every time we played golf against each other when we were in college. And whereas everybody else was spinning the ball into the air, we all spun it into the air. You know, those guys learned how to taught themselves how to launch it into the air and take the spin off of it. And, you know, that's kind of lost on today's generation because all the equipment does it for you. I mean, it's set up to do it. So you don't have to teach yourself how to hit those shots. They're hit for you, basically. You just have to have the guy with the track man who's running the track man give you the right numbers. Okay, we need to get 200 more spin off your ball. Okay, let's take the wrench out. Yeah. Okay, knock it down a half degree. Boom, there you go. There's 200 less RPMs. There's your little knuckle cut.
It's so funny. My buddy Vince India gave me a driver a couple years ago. He plays on the web. And it was one of his old drivers. He built it up for me, and I'm hitting it. And I see him a couple of weeks later, and he's like, "Hey, how's that driver?" I'm like, "Hey, you know, it's a little too spinny. You know, I just feel like I'm losing, you know, 10 yards because it's just spinning so much." He goes, "Oh, let me just flip the gravity core." Flips this thing, and all of a sudden, I'm hitting it 25 yards further. It was nuts.
Yeah,
it's just like. Just like that. It just took all the spin off the ball.
Yeah, that's, I got to hand it to guys like Marty Jurtson at Ping and all the engineers they have done such a phenomenal job, you know, recreating the driver because the USGA finally, thank goodness, said, okay, enough's enough. This is where we're stopping. We're stopping at this coefficient of restitution and we're stopping at this size head. So now you got to mess around with CG and MOI and you got to, and materials and put it all together and see what you can come up with. And, you know, everybody at all the manufacturers and engineers like Marty, they're doing such a good job reinventing the wheel and creating, you know, easier clubs to hit, even though they're cut off from a certain standpoint from the USGA from going forward and progressing the technology. They have to find different ways to progress the technology with what they have, and they're doing a good job of that through MOI and how they put the heads together and where they put the CG and how you can change the CG around. And it's really I find that fascinating. I think it's really cool. It's fun to tinker. I'll tell you what, the one thing I don't miss having to test six different drivers alongside of one another and not liking any of them. And then being out there all day because they had to rebuild drivers and glue into every head versus now you just grab a shaft and you lock it in and boom, you go. And so, you're literally fitting a driver in a half an hour.
So honestly, you don't miss the days where the driver was the hardest club to hit in the bag and not the easiest.
I don't miss those testing days. I just wanted to find a driver that those testing days drove me nuts. I'm like, I used to just sit there and cringe when I had to, you know, Titleist had come out with a new driver when I was signed with Titleist when I was playing, and I'd just sit there and cringe. And I love testing wedges. I love testing irons because they were pretty easy for me to fit. As long as you got the loft and lies right, I know the window that my ball should be coming out of, the window that I want to see. I know how it should spin. You know, I know the distance I should hit it into the wind, how I should hit it downwind, crosswind, the sole, whole nine yards. As long as it's doing that, boom, we're good. Throw them in the bag. Drivers were like, oh, I used to just, and three woods. Drivers and three woods drove me insane, Andy. Oh, they drove me nuts testing those things. Because they'd wear my ass out after a half an hour of hitting balls with a driver. I mean, I can only hit so many drivers back in the day, and I would get tired. Drive me nuts. Yeah, so now it's nice and easy. You know, now it's pretty simple. This is where we're trying to get to, 25 or 22 to, or 20. For me, I like it 23 to 2600 spin. 23 to 2600, I want to launch it at about 11, 11 and a half, tops 12. And, you know, the spin rate should be that 23 to 26, 12 and a half. Yeah, 23 to 26, 12 and a half. That's what I want. Any lower and I can't control it, any higher and I lose distance. But right in that little sweet spot, I'm golden, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the ball speed and the club head speed, it is what it is with an old man with four hand surgeries.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'll take what I can get.
I do now, because as a out of shape golf blogger and podcaster that sits in a chair most days, you know.
Just yeah, exactly. It sounds like you still create some good speed though at 300 yards, man.
Yeah, nah. My best days are might be behind me. Is what I'm starting to learn. Sure. So what do you think about this whole new schedule with Open as the fourth major?
I like it. I really do. I like it. I think from coming now that I'm not playing. And I have to look at it from a television perspective. I think it's great for the fans. I think you get a massive event every month culminating in the FedEx Cup playoffs. You get the Players, you get the Masters, you get the PGA, you get the US Open, you get the Open Championship. Bang, 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 bang. Right in a row. Every month, once a month, you got a basically a major championship, okay? And then all culminates in the FedEx Cup playoffs, and it's all done before football. Okay. The fall season is great, and the fall season is becoming more and more important. There's no doubt. You look at the statistics, it behooves guys to go and play the fall season to get a great jump on FedEx Cup points so that you don't get too far behind. Now the top players, they don't have to, you know, they're going to play in those Asia swing, free point, you know, for three straight events. So they don't have to worry about, they're going to get points no matter what. But the guys who aren't in those Asia events, the rank and file, it's really a big deal to play in that fall season. But, you know, the PGA Tour, the real PGA Tour season for, I think, the fan, the average fan, is from when we're seeing whales breach out of the water at Kapalua all the way until we hold the last putt at East Lake. That's the season, okay? And I think that right now it's nice and compact. I think the stories flow a little bit easier. I think from a television scheduling standpoint, we've all had our hair on fire to a certain extent, especially a guy like me who does four different tours for Golf Channel. It's not like I'm just doing the PGA Tour or just doing the Champs Tour. I'm NCAAs. I do a women's event here and there. I'm all over the place. So my schedule's pretty hectic, especially from May 1st on. May through July, my schedule's nuts. So I think from a TV personnel standpoint and analyst standpoint, we were all kind of sitting there going, oh boy, what's our schedule? What our schedule is going to look like, and how, you know, in this compact season. And I think to a certain extent, I think we were all fairly crazy at the Golf Channel with our schedules, but I think that it's for the average fan. I like it. I think it's great. I didn't like the Players in May. didn't like the players in May. I really didn't. Mm-hmm. I don't like the way that golf course plays in May. I played one players in May, the first one in 07, and then hurt myself and couldn't play, didn't play in another one. I prefer it in March. I prefer it in March. And now that we got it back in March, I think that's a good thing. And then, but obviously to go March, April, and 1 month increments, pretty much, except for maybe from, yeah, now in 1 month increments, literally 1 month increments, you've got a major championship. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's wild from a coverage standpoint. I feel like I'm getting over the one, the next one started.
Yeah, no, all of us in the media and or in the golf media, golf blogosphere, anybody who's doing anything media oriented in golf, our hair's been on fire all year. There's no doubt. And there's busy and then there's psycho busy. And I think that all of us were, for the most part, if you had a full schedule, you know, you were psycho busy this year from a golf media standpoint.
The thing that's interesting is how this new schedule has affected like Tiger's schedule, where we're seeing him like now this, we saw him play a lot in the lead up of the Masters, but now, you know, for the Open, no starts between the US Open and the Open.
I also think that has a lot to do with 43 years old and, you know, and 8 surgeries between his knee and his back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot going on there, Andy, that I think if Tiger, let's just pretend Tiger's never had a surgery and he's 43 years old. I think Tiger plays a couple times, quite honestly. I think he does. I think he plays a couple times between the Open and even though he didn't in the past, maybe he does now. You know, to get the reps in. Maybe he plays at least once. You know, he used to play he played one event between, he always played one event between the U.S. Open and the Open Championship back in the day. Mm-hmm. Just to see where he was at. Then he'd go over and play, you know, he'd get over there a week early, get adjusted, practice play on the golf course and make sure that he had all his ducks in a row. But he's, you know, he's 43 with all the stuff that he's had going on with him. I can't blame him. We're going to see more and more of a Hogan-like schedule out of him, I think, as the years go on, quite honestly, because the body, you know, I don't know if his doctor said the same thing my doctor told me after my fourth hand surgery, which was basically, I don't know how many shots he got after my last surgery. I don't know how many shots he got left in his hand, but there's a number. And once you hit that number, you're done. He said that to me verbatim. And I said, whoa, that's honesty for you. So maybe Tiger has that. He doesn't know about it. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe doctors have said, you're good. Just take care of it. But he's definitely got to do things differently now and can't play the way that, you know, can't play and practice the way he once did. So I don't blame him. I don't know. In all honesty, Andy, I don't know if it has as much to do with the schedule as it does, honestly, his back and his body. Quite honestly.
Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. I'm still shocked that he won the Masters, you know, just,
oh, I think we're all in shock. We're all still in shock that he won the Masters. It was everything kind of fell into place. He hit the shots. He hit the shots. And you know what, if his back's good, the temperatures are right, I wouldn't doubt it if he contended at Portrush.
Yeah,
there's two tournaments that are kind to old people, and that's the guy and people who know what they're doing around them. That's the Masters and the Open Championship. So
I feel like that dovetails well with what you were saying about romanticism in golf. I feel like the Open kind of brings it back a little bit.
I think everybody. I totally agree, because you know what? There's that's still the one place, Augusta to a certain extent, but still Augusta's still. You can play modern golf at Augusta and not get penalized. Honestly, you don't have to, you still need to shape shots, but you can still stand up on tees at Augusta and just swing away with today's equipment. You don't have to move the ball. You still kind of got to move the ball on a links course. You got to hit it low. You got to roll it out there. You got to bowl it sometimes. You got to take spin off. You've got to do all kinds of funny stuff at an Open Championship. With a golf ball, it's definitely the most old school, nostalgic, just romanticized tournament. And, you know, honestly, it's probably my favorite to watch. It is. I'd have to say it is my favorite to watch. And I'd have to say after that, it's probably the Masters. But the Open Championship's my favorite to watch for that reason.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think the last couple of Opens have been just so good too. Last year I had this moment, I'm like, yep, this is my favorite major. And I think there's something, I think obviously you're always going to get firm conditions, you know, the number one thing I enjoy watching is like that hollow thud when the ball hits the ground is the best sound in golf. But then when you throw in wind, to me, that's when you get wind and firm, that's when you really separate, you know, the real players from the kind of the good golfers.
We were talking about this last week. It doesn't matter. You can make a golf course. If the golf course is soft, it can be fun to watch, but you're going to have everybody and their grandmother right there with a chance to win. You really don't know who's hitting it well and who's not hitting it well on a soft golf course. When, as soon as that golf course firms up and gets like a brick, the separation happens really quickly, and you know exactly who's hitting it well and who's not hitting it well, and who's got control of their ball and their spin and their trajectory and who doesn't. Firmness is the absolute separator. The firmness of a golf course is the absolute separator of good ball strikers and even moderate to mediocre ball strikers, not even poor ball strikers, but just guys who are just kind of average ball strikers that week, that potential week. It'll separate, those guys will be gone. And the guys who are at the top of the board, the first 20, 25 names, you know, those are the guys that are striking their ball for the most part the best. Firm conditions, the best ball strikers are always going to come to the top, I think.
And then if
especially
you throw
when
in
the greens are firm.
And then if you throw in the wind, that's when all the trajectory control and the spin control, all that just gets so high. That's what's so cool. And there's no options taken away at Opens either. You can hit all different types of shots.
Exactly, which is why to this day and for history that I can think of, Phil Mickelson is the greatest Open champion of all time. Because, I mean, he's a good iron player. He's always been a good iron player, but his calling card was not links golf. Never was. And he taught himself how to play it and pulled it off. And no one thought he could win that tournament. I don't think he even thought he could win that tournament. And for him to do it, phenomenal.
All right, you got to get out of here, Aaron. Always a pleasure having you on. But all right, before you got to go, what real quick? Who's your pick to win the Open?
I haven't given it much thought. I'll be honest with you. To be honest, I'm going to go. Let me think about it really quick. I think it's going to be a top 10 guy, and I honestly think that he's done enough on links golf courses to he's coming in hot. It's hard for me to get away from a guy like John Rahm on a place like that. It really is.
Yeah.
He's got the control. I saw what he did at the Irish Open this last week. It's going to be tougher, obviously, at Port Rush.
He's been knocking on the major door too. He's had a couple top fives in the last few majors.
He's starting to figure it out, and I think that his game, you know, he plays a piercing flight. He's good in the wind. He's good in bad conditions. He drives it fantastic. If he just keeps his emotions in check, that's the biggest thing for Rahm. If he can keep his emotions in check, I think John Rahm can get it done. I really do. I think he can win his first major championship.
Awesome. Well, hey, thanks for coming on, and we'll watch for you this week at the senior players in Akron.
You've been listening to the Fried Egg Podcast. We do the digging for you.